Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another special guest. She starred as Victoria in the 2016 Broadway revival of Cats. Welcome, Georgina Peskogin, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, so, thanks so much for having me, Mike.
So I do want to kick things off because I almost always ask everyone their history with Cats, but you had, before you got asked to audition, you've had a very long ballet career. And so I want to ask kind of what made you decide to say, yeah, I'll go out for Cats. Like, I'll take on that audition.
That is a very long story. I will try to make it succinct. So I am a soloist with New York City Ballet. I had been performing there, had recently gotten promoted in 2013, and sort of... At a certain point in a large institutional ballet company, you get kind of like categorized and placed in these like boxes of what sort of roles you were due. So I was like coming up against a lot of like barriers or ceilings, if you will. Like I am the first Asian American woman to ever be promoted out of the core of New York City Ballet in its 70-year existence. Wow. So that gives you an idea of the kind of people are used to seeing blonde hair, blue eyed ballerinas and this Eurocentric idea. And they're not really used to seeing like the sugar plum fairy be this. So, flat out frustration, I was seeking other ways to feed this artistry that I had, which I sort of started to moonlight on Broadway.
Casual moonlight on Broadway.
Yeah. Yeah. This sounds super privileged, but I've been taking a lot of theater classes. I've always been one to keep educating myself in dance. And my first foray was Josh Burgos. Josh called me. He had choreographed On the Town. And then John Rando, who was directing it, called me. And I just happened to like make this decision one summer layoff that I was going to go take tap classes again. So I bought tap shoes and I get a call from John Rando being like, hey, do you want to make your Broadway debut? But tomorrow? And I'm like,
tomorrow?
Sure. I mean, like I'm on a layoff with New York City Ballet. This is like, I'm a free agent at this point. I was like, yeah. So like what happened is that unfortunately an ensemble dancer, broke her toe. So I went in, learned the track, and Josh knew that I'm a New York City Ballet dancer. And what's kind of rare about our breed is that we learn choreography really fast. So I learned I learned her entire track in a day, plus Ivy Smith's track, which is the title, the lead role. And I had no idea what they were thinking. So they were going to have me cover Ivy, and I was going to do, so I had fun, like 2 week stint on Broadway. And then I like left it. And then I came back and did my summer season at Saratoga Springs with New York City Ballet, get a call again. Hey, you know, my colleague is leaving Ivy Smith the role. we have an interim. Would you be willing to come in and play Ivy Smith for 2 weeks? And so like, that's how, then I just caught the Broadway bug. I mean, like just being in that environment with these people and having people surround you without this, like the competitiveness in the ballet world is so intense. And that's not to say that competition isn't there in the Broadway world. But it was such a different and wonderful experience. So that's when I was approached to be like, would you ever be interested in auditioning for Cats? I was like, well, I'm flattered, but what cat would I be? Cause I'm like, I'm not a Victoria. I mean, you've been talking to me for like the past 10 minutes and I'm like the antithesis of what Victoria the White Cat is. And I just wasn't sure. So I was like, sure. They're like, just come do this audition. Come meet Andy. It was for a different project. I had a blast in the audition and got kind of, you know, told like, hey, you should do this. You should. And he kind of saw a different side of me. So he gave me a chance to be soft and feminine, which is something I'm not usually afforded to be at the ballet, believe it or not. Like I play very feminine, strong characters at the ballet.
And so you at least had a preconceived notion of what Victoria was supposed to be. So when was the first time you were exposed to the musical pre-audition?
The VHS tape. And I, right here in Altoona, Pennsylvania, where I sit right now, after Catholic school, I would come home at around 2:30 and my first ballet class would start like 4:30. And so I would watch Cats and alternate between Cats and or Lord of the Dance. So
just those two.
I'm the ultimate nerd. Yeah, just those two, just really obsessed about Celtic, Irish dancing and Cats.
And so when you watch, how many times have you seen that VHS?
Like a lot.
Did you ever burn through an entire VHS? Like, do you have a second one?
No, okay. I just have
not
those.
Not that level, but close probably.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I wasn't like rewinding and going back. And it just was like, I just thought it was really bizarre. I mean, I also was the kid that sat there and watched Bob Ross and thought that was the most thrilling TV of all time.
So Bob Ross, Cats, and Irish dancing.
Yeah, this is why I'm single. Yeah. This is
that is quite a trio for, you said, high school age.
Yeah, like ninth grade. Sad Gina.
So you knew already, you had seen the VHS plenty of times, so you knew. And so you said, hey, I'm probably not the typical Victoria. Who would you say you would have like thought, okay, that's who they want me for?
Well, I mean, she's the ballerina cat. So, and I only had this one person's like portrayal in my mind, and like, I just wasn't, she played this role as such like, there was an innocence there, but almost an innocence in a, like a fragile sort of way, which is like, and my whole approach to it was like, have you seen kittens? They're fucking crazy. They like bounce off the ceiling. Like, so I kind of infused it with my energy. And I think I found it worked for me. Apparently it worked for Trevor Nunn and Andy Blankenbuehler too. And I do have to give some credit here that I was working with a company called American Dance Machine for the 21st Century. And Nikki Atkins wanted me to do an excerpt, which was the White Cat solo, like out of context, which that's really weird. I know you want to talk to me about that dance,
yeah,
but it's really weird out of context. So like they were doing like Turkey Lurkey, which
it's really weird in context.
Yeah. So like imagine like me like rolling onto the floor and like doing this solo completely out of the blue in a montage of like highlights from Broadway's best dance
with no cats behind you, nothing.
No cats, not even dressed like a cat.
Just the dance number. Yeah.
So, but what was the super, super wonderful bonus out of that is I met and worked with Dame Gillian Lynn, who was the original choreographer, and got to learn how special her White Cat was to her and how much she had perseverated over choreographing that specific. It's only like what, 64 counts possibly of music. It's quite short, that little solo, but how important it was to her, and the touching interaction between her and her husband, where her husband finally was like, you know, Jilly, it's time. You know, like, it was like a week before the show opened. She's like, you have to, it's time to put the white cat, bring her to life. So that was a really special sort of like head start into the whole process and creating who Victoria is for me.
So what else were you told to help create that Victoria? And then who is Victoria for you? Like, what's, what backstory were you given?
So my three secret words, so Trevor Nunn, and like, yeah, you've heard from other people. I've heard from other people
about the three secret words. Yeah.
And then also like the craziness of where we were like just crawled around on our knees. I mean, can you imagine my like delight from like going from ballet class where it's like super strict to like having to put on knee pads, and now they're just like crawl around.
in a short period, you didn't have that much time to kind of prep for this role.
They were, you know, they did the casting, and then we got into a room. We did this whole circle where they introduced everyone. And they were like, "Okay, everybody on the floor." Yeah. And I was like, "This is wild."
Yeah, it's a different, I mean, it sounds like a very different experience in general.
You just had to jump off the cliff or just get left behind in this, so my words were innocent, romantic, and unapologetic.
I wouldn't have expected that last one.
Yeah, and I really kind of grabbed onto the unapologetic one.
So those are your three words. What kind of backstory did you come up with? Because I've heard from some of your other cast members that they had very intricate kind of thoughts about who their cat was going in. Did you have that, or did you kind of stick to your words?
Well, I knew, especially for the solo, that Jillian, you know, Andy was very forthright in saying that like he hadn't, like he wanted to honor Jilly. Like Jilly was like, you can't touch White Cat solo. You can mess around with whatever else you need to, and improve upon, or, you know, like cut what, you know, do what you do, you, Andy. Like, I think they had a very like symbiotic relationship in that. And they understood each other in their mutual respect of the choreography there.
Yeah.
But my backstory, you know, she's a young cat. I kind of, it depended on the show. Sometimes I played her like a little bit of a ditz until the second act. And then sometimes she would just be this wild feral thing, like keeping in mind this like crazy idea how I've seen my friends' kittens just like go ape shit on an apartment.
Oh yeah.
And so I have that, capability and my performance quality. Like, I dance much bigger than my actual body frame, so I kind of cued into that in the bigger dance sequences. So like my backstory, she was pretty young, so there's not a lot I can say. Like, I'm new to this is my first Jellicle ball, first time being invited, and, you know, I've got like my young friends, but I'm also like, like, you know, like Tyler Haynes and I were very close friends at the time. So it's just like Tiger and Victoria don't really have a thing, but we made it a thing. So like, yeah, Victoria was like scrappy enough to like hang with the more adult cats too. But she kind of like respected the boundary.
I'm starting to think Tyler's friendships with actual actors are the reasons that there are a lot of cats rumor mill, like from that production, because I think he had relationships with so many people from the cast that you could see it or feel it on stage. And it was like a little, maybe different than what they were expecting, but it's, we talked about it when I interviewed him, because there was a couple where everyone's like, I don't know, they might hate each other. And he's like, no, we just had fun with that. You know, like, okay.
So that's the backstory. And I also like had a collar. So I imagine that I did have an owner, and that I, you know, like I wasn't one of the, you know, the wild cats of the junkyard. So.
Yeah. The rumor is your owner is the landlord.
Of the junkyard.
Yes. Of the, I think the house that Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer are technically stealing from.
Wow. Okay. Possibly.
So let's talk about your dance numbers. Because you have two kind of major dance numbers. The one is the one you've already talked about, which is the solo. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about dance, about ballet, about in general. I know nothing about singing. I was mesmerized when I saw it because I had no idea what I was going to go see. And that particular number sticks out because it's just like everything stops around it. And it's just like the main focus. And it was beautiful and like really, really cool and just such a cool thing to see. Then I started reading kind of the backstory behind it. And it's like there's a lot of rumors of how that is actually like the interpretation of that. How would you describe your solo dance number? Is it your
age? It's a coming of age, but also like because of time constraints and I was like doing this American Dance Machine project like off company hours. I was meeting Dame Jillian Lynn at like 8:30 in the morning and she would come in. She's like, okay, this has to be from the nipples. And I'm like, I haven't even had a sip of coffee yet. What's going on? And it is fully sensual. I wouldn't say like sexual, but it is sensual. Like this cat is starting to come into her own body and feel this like immense feline power. And I think it's also very much a feminist story. I think cats in general and this whole late edition of Grisabella being the heroine, it's all a super feminist story. And I can elaborate upon that, but like, there's no ifs and buts. You read right. Like it's a very sensual solo. It's her, like she would say, like when she wanted like the split to be very slow. And just as I like hit the ground, she wanted this like reverberation through my body. And she would literally be like, it's like an orgasm, Gina. And I was like, it is 9 o'clock in the morning.
That had to be quite an experience to go through, especially at that time, the morning, that time with the original, you know, just with who it was too, just such a unique experience.
But she was so warm and loving and the way and she was a ballet dancer. I mean, I'm trying to explain a lot of the like ballet dancers are so in tune with their bodies anyway. So it didn't really shock me for her to be like, I need you to feel this from like your root chakra. Like that's something I'm used to. It's not faked or like, you really have to be in it in the sense of like theater. There's no film. There's like no magic of film happening here. Mm-hmm. And it was also just wild that this like, how old was she there? She must've been like 89. She and like didn't have her hip replacement yet. And she could do the solo better than that. Like she did the coccyx balance, which is like the tail balance where like the two legs are up at the end of the solo. That was so hard for me. And she was like, boop.
Just like, right away.
What's your problem, Gina?
Yeah. Wow.
She was incredible. She is just a wonderful, a God rest her soul. She's the most wonderful person.
So your first, the solo is very sensual. The second dance is very sexual.
And yeah, I would say that's more sexual.
It's basically a mating dance is what it reads. Mm-hmm. As, and it's with, was it with Plato in your production?
Yes.
Okay. Cause I also am basing almost all of my knowledge from the VHS, which is what's on YouTube. And so every time I'm like, oh, what happened in 2016, which is the only production I've seen live. I saw it twice in 2016. But I don't, you know, I'm sitting here.
Did you even get to see me before I had to leave?
Yeah. Okay. I saw the second to last preview.
Oh, you saw the fun stuff.
That was my story was I had a friend that grabbed tickets who works in Broadway who said, let's go see it. Like, this is the I just moved to New York. Like, this is the show you got to see. That's very kind of traditional Broadway. And then she got super sick and couldn't go. And so I went by myself during a matinee on a Saturday and I had no idea what I was seeing and was just like mesmerized. And so, yeah, that is the very first one. Then I saw it about a year later. So I think you were both of them.
Oh, wow. Mike, I kind of love that story. Your first cat's experience.
Yeah, it was matinee. No one told me that I should have had like a lot more to drink before mm-hmm. I got there. Mm-hmm. I was not warned of that. But But yes, okay. So second one is definitely a mating dance. You're virtually, yeah.
It's this because what? Now I'm forgetting what it was called. And when we like Jillian Lynn had worked with us for a while, and actually Chris Gurr writes about this. Well, he wrote about it, and then he did it in his podcast, in his own podcast. I don't know if you listened to it. Another Cat's Diary. He describes how like Jillian Lynn came in and like made us get all in the orgy clump. And it's called an orgy clump. I believe in the notes. I mean, my facts could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it says orgy clump in the musical score and or the like the books, the course.
The notes. Yeah, okay.
The notes. So it's like we're all overtaken by this like power of the Jellicle Moon, this like magic. And so it's about sex. And so like I'm the one that's just found myself in the solo, like tapped into my like ineffable namesake. And then Plato, who was played by Daniel Gaiman, what a wonderful partnership that was. I have never trusted somebody so much. And he tossed me all over that stage. And it was just trust from day one. And to have that sort of like intimate of an interaction every night dressed as cats seems wild, but it was also just like a very special thing to have. Mm-hmm. And I felt super safe. And it was fun to get into that, like the whole, you know, like those like first dates where you like want to kiss someone and you don't, like kind of like feeling that again every night is refreshing and kind of revives your soul from doing the same thing, you know, over and over again.
So one of the things I've argued is that I don't think this show is for children. And the fact that in the notes it says an orgy clump, might prove that. But do you think that, like, I mean, I guess you watched it as a ninth grader, but do you think if you want to bring a 7 or 8 year old to the theater to see Cats?
My like little nieces and nephews came, and
so I think that's a little different because you're in it. Like, you know, it's different to go see someone they know, but like, what if
they like didn't even care? Like Gabe, he was all about, I think it's Natasha Katz that did the lighting. He was all about the lighting. I mean, the lighting was super trippy. Like he cued in on like a totally different aspect of the show. He's like, oh yeah, it's my aunt. I don't think he picked up on the sexual nature of it.
Okay. That seems fair.
I think it's all like,
I mean,
there's a lot of distraction.
I mean, the stage itself, like that was the first thing I noticed, is that the stage is incredible. But I also was the third seat in and was not prepared for Green Eyes. And it scared the living daylights out of me as an adult. And so I just kept thinking, there's no way. Like, there's no way. And then you start to see all this very sexual stuff. And then I started kind of listening. I'm like, some of these lyrics are a little aggressive. You know, it's probably all going over the kid's head, but there are kids everywhere.
I mean, the T.S. Eliot poems are like kind of dark. Like, Grisabella's
not in the book because it was too dark for children, was the reason it was left out of the book.
Like, there's some really deep, dark themes, but I think it's important for children to, if it gets them and they start to love dance, I mean, there was one little boy, and it was right when I was leaving the show and he had waited for like an hour. I had no idea. I was just decompressing after a 2.5 hour show. Mm-hmm. And then finally someone calls me down and he was sobbing. I mean, he did not pick up on any of like the weird sexual like tensions or anything. He just was he's like, I've never seen anyone dance so beautifully before. Like, this kid literally went home and asked his mom to start him in dance classes.
That's so incredible. Like,
I think for that reason, take your kids to the theater. And like, there would be a disclaimer. Perhaps there might be, like, I hear you, Mike, like maybe a disclaimer, be like, there's some set like sensual like situations. But like, what's different than like what they see on TV nowadays anyway?
That's fair. I mean, that's a different argument.
Right. I know.
That's what's worse. No, and I agree to bring kids to theater because like, being able to see, especially musicals. You know, you get to see kind of the singing, the dancing, and all the numbers that go with it. That was the, as I, you know, poked fun at Cats, the storyline. The other half of that is that it's, as someone who can't dance and can't sing, it's like, oh, this takes some serious skill to be able to perform this, especially when you're doing both at the same time. You know, like some of those songs, like you see on Broadway in general, has a lot of singing and dancing together. And it's like Cats is just like nonstop where you're really in it. So I was very impressed, but I also was a little, you know, it was a little trippy. And so I kind of walked out being like, oh, that was like, again, impressive, but also what did I just witness?
Yeah, that seems about right. And I want to thank you so much for appreciating how much work went into that. Like the singing and the dancing combined, and then like dealing with like the raked metal stage and not being on a flat surface and just crawling around like a cat. Like it, we would say like Cats is a lifestyle.
Like, and virtually nothing. Like you're in basically a onesie.
And that's the other thing about like my character development. During the previews, you know, there was like this whole discussion about like how people were seeing like my undergarments through my white unitard. And I was like, because you can't wear white undergarments under a white unitard. It's just going to come out like more opaque, like it has to be skin tone. And then we like got into the whole discussion, like you have to match my skin tone. Otherwise, you're still going to see the underwear. and then, like as the white cat, I couldn't hide at all. Even the numbers that I wasn't dancing, I just like showed up as this little blue thing, and lit in the corner, even when I was trying to hide. So like those were the moments where I'd like look to Tyler and we'd play, you know, just start messing around with each other when I was in the corner. And people would always inevitably see that because I'd forget, like you are a beacon of light literally on the stage.
Well, especially after your first number two, it's like you were the center and then you can see you everywhere. So it's I do want to ask about the kind of Cats rumor mill and see if you can either agree, disagree. So one of the rumors, which I think you might not be totally true, because I think you sing in the show too, correct?
I don't have like a solo. Originally Syllabub and Victoria or Jemima and Victoria were the same cat. And then in the original production, there wasn't a ballet dancer that could do the Victoria track and then also sing the very high pitched. Mm-hmm.
So one of the rumors is that Victoria is a deaf or mute cat.
Well, that's so clearly not, that wasn't my storyline, but how interesting.
And then the other one we talked about was that you're the landlord's cat, and it's because of the collar and the fact that your fur is like very clean and white and more indoor cat than some of the other characters.
I mean, I would say that I definitely have an owner. Am I the owner of the house that Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer are stealing things out of? That's maybe stretching it. I don't know.
You can stretch a lot in this, which we're going to get to next.
Okay.
So family tree.
It's plausible.
Family tree. There's zero. It's a lot of dotted lines. So one rumor is that you're Grisabella's daughter.
Oh.
Because you're the first one to welcome her back at the end, and probably just age in general as being one of the younger kittens and she's one of the older cats. So do you think that has any merit?
Yeah, I think there's merit to that. I didn't see it that way in the way I portrayed it. I thought she is like a vision of what, like, I think Victoria and Grisabella were their kindred spirits. Because I think that makes sense. Grisabella was a Victoria. Like she had an owner. She had a something, and that all went by the wayside. So that's why Grisabella kind of their arc is they're tethered together in their storylines.
Do you think Victoria followed Grisabella's path down the dark path, or do you think she stayed pure? More pure.
Listen, that girl's not Victoria's the pure, not pure after Jellicle Ball.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. She stayed in the Jellicle tribe, did not leave to go rumored to be a cat prostitute. That's what the rumor is for Grizabella. When she leaves.
I don't think Victoria went that route. I think Victoria is kind of like a deeper, she's a deeper empathetic feline of that tribe. I think she initially, like her reaction to Grizabella, like she's just thought, like she is so finding who she is. And I think she just kind of breaks away from the groups and is like, nah, I think this chick is fine. Like, let's give her a shot. Let's not be total dicks.
Okay, so it's not mom. It's a little bit of like, this could be my future. Let's welcome her back.
I think it's like, what would I feel like if I had I would want them to see. I think she sees a good in Grizabella. I think she sees a potential. I think she sees that. I think she sees a softer side in a lot of the cats, actually. Like. Mm-hmm.
So the other rumor is that your monk is trapped in Demeter's daughter.
I would believe that more.
Okay, so that one seems more plausible.
Yeah, I would believe that more.
Why does that one seem more plausible?
Because Monkeystrap is totally a dad to Victoria. Like, totally a dad.
Okay. So that one seems, that one has more merit. The other one is that there's the obvious love interest with Plato. But mm-hmm. The other one is that you might have a love interest with Mr. Mistopheles.
Oh, I thought the rumor was that Mr. Mistopheles and Tugger had a love interest.
Well, I mean, that one's definitely the case. But there is a Victoria, Mr. Mistopheles rumor as well. And yeah. It's either, you know, potential, you know, either lovers or brother-sister. I think it's because in the VHS production, you see them together a lot during different dances. And you see them kind of interacting a lot during different dances.
I don't know. I don't know if I wouldn't say it was a romantic attraction. I'm gonna say like meh to romantic attraction. I think it's more of like a maybe she's like the budding. I was gonna say she's like the budding wingman for her gay friend Mistopheles.
Yeah, and helping. that kind of works with the fact
she's
that
like
you
helping
were with
procure that like whole Tugger that, thing. Like,
yeah. Okay. That makes sense. That fits your storyline a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, so a couple other character questions. If you were not Victoria, which cat would you want to play?
Bomb Ballerina.
Ooh, another very great dance number and song.
I mean, Christine Cornish-Smith slayed it. I would watch her and just do her number. I'd be like, I wish I could sing like that and also dance. Like, I was so humbled by the whole process of being in that company. It was really one of the scariest things I've done, but also one of the most gratifying things I've ever done. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's honestly, as I've watched the show, that's become my favorite song.
Yeah.
It's the one that gets stuck in my head most often now. I just think it's great.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Who would you want to quarantine with? Which cat would you want to quarantine with?
I mean, endless entertainment with Mistopheles.
Yeah, I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, I mean, like, plus we could dress up together. We both like glittery outfits. Like, I have a rhinestone collar. He has a rhinestone jacket. Like, I think we'd get along great.
I do want to ask the main question, which is I've argued at length that Grizabella was not the right character to die at the end of the musical. So I actually rated Victoria's incomplete when I did my episode because I did not think that your character was even really up for it. And just wouldn't have, like, I think that you eventually will win. Like, your character in however many years is going to win the Jellicle competition and die to ascend to the outside layer, but not this one. So, but I don't think it was Grizabella. So do you agree? And if you want to defend Grizabella, why? And if not, who do you think should have died?
I have been pondering this. And I do think Grizabella was the right choice.
Okay.
And
let's hear the rationale.
So you have this whole idea. And I tried to, like, when I was explaining, like, why people should come to Cats and why it's like a great, it's yes, we're cats, but yes, these are all feelings and personalities that humans have. So in looking at it in that frame now, like minus the fur, what do we normally do to our women once they become old and no longer beautiful? We sort of discard them as a society. And so what pains me on a lot of different levels and in a lot of, like, my research and backstory for Victoria, it's just like, you know, I have chosen for my profession to be a ballerina, and that's a young person's game. Like, I am 35. I'm no longer 19, 20, like that. So I physically feel just sort of like the decay of my, I just feel the body wane a little bit more viscerally than maybe a normal person would. That I don't want to, like, speak for someone who doesn't dance. I'm sure, like, we all feel aches and pains at our age. But so that was something, and like, I will have to give up this career that I love, that I've dedicated my life to. And so, like, and how Grizabella is, her whole plot is that she didn't do anything wrong. She didn't kill anyone. She's not like a Macavity. She was a sex worker. And we don't know the circumstances of why she had to do this, but she managed to survive through that. And generally speaking, like there's a lot of abuse. Like, we emotionally abuse her, and like some of the cats actually swipe at her in the show. So, like, there's abuse to this female cat. And then she builds up all of this, like, emotion, and she's lamenting the choices that she's made. And she, like, sings this guttural, like, heartbreaking song of, like, memory of, like, a youth. And a youth lost, a beauty lost, and she feels worthless. And that's why every single night I would be sobbing in tears, because it's just this idea that, like, wow. And it happens in real life too. Like, we, like, look at any woman in Hollywood over the age of 40. Like, they, I do think she was the right cat to be picked and to ascend and to be given a chance to maybe relive. And we all make mistakes, but I don't feel like her mistakes were like being a pedophile. You know,
so your framing is just a very different, like, with the way you framed it, I agree with you. I framed it totally different.
Well, how did you frame it? I want to understand how you framed it.
So I've explained this a couple of times on this podcast, so I'm sorry for everyone.
Give me the abridged version.
When I went to go see it, I was almost, part of it was like, hey, Leona Lewis is going to be Grizabella, which that meant nothing to me. Grizabella, I was like, okay, Leona Lewis is going to sing the one song I knew going into the show. She was on The X Factor. Then I saw Old Deuteronomy sitting on stage, and it felt like a judge. And I just immediately framed it as a singing competition.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And so that was my, like, and that was why the frame of reference came, is because I was like, oh yeah, this is like, and I watched those shows, I enjoy those shows. And so I immediately was like, oh, they're just competing, and it's a show. And it's like, instead of America voting, it's going to be Old Deuteronomy. And I've got the person who is who's won or, you know, was successful on one of those shows. But I was like, that was just, I mean, Memory's an incredible song and belted out like so well. But I was like, it's not the one I was most entertained by. And then you start arguing, I'm like, Magic does really well on America's Got Talent. Like, there's a lot of different things. So I framed it totally that way, which is why I'm, you know, everyone who's come on and given very thoughtful and real explanations, I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's nice and all, but like, it's not America's Got Talent. I just take a very kind of humorous, fun poke at it. And that's the way I've made all of my arguments.
Yeah. I mean, like, I can see it to be like, is she the most flashy character? Nah. So if you are viewing it in that sort of competitive, like just for sheer, like razzle dazzle of like the theater, yeah, then no, she wouldn't. But in terms of like, that's what's great about musical theater is that you have like these numbers that can kind of like these musical numbers help bring the plot along. And we all know that the plot of Cats
is loose. It's loose.
And that's what I love hearing about everyone's different. Like it can be whatever the hell you want it to be. I just happen to like, you know, like Victoria, like I don't get to have like a fun, I don't get to be like an asshole cat, like Tugger. So I had to frame it like in my work in a way that made her seem very honest and very just real. And what is this connection? Like what would actually would make her, she doesn't know this cat and like, she's not my mom. I didn't think she was my mom.
Okay.
So like what would make me feel so compelled to comfort her?
So not the competition thing, because otherwise you'd be rooting against her.
Yeah, totally.
Because you were in it. You know, you had your dance number.
Yeah,
you had a chance. In my frame. Yeah.
Well, thanks for thinking I had a chance. I didn't even think I had a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more you kind of really dig in, your character doesn't. But the biggest group out there is Team Gus.
But I also agree with like girl Gus like lived his like 9 lives. He's like, yeah, cool.
That he's done.
Yeah, he's like, it's hard. It's hard. And then you have people like Victoria running around and they're like, no.
Yeah, that's Tugger too.
Yeah.
But Tugger's was, again, a wildly entertaining performance.
Oh, yeah. Like, that was probably one of my favorite numbers to dance. I love the Rum Tum Tugger, what Andy did with Rum Tum Tugger. And I also loved... How do you not love McCavity? But and I loved the fight scene too. That was super fun. Oh, I really wish you would have seen like when one of like the malfunctions happened in the show. Like there was one time when the boot didn't drop, and then like the stage manager Ira had to come over the god mic and be like, he didn't even say Victoria. He was like, Georgina, stop. And I was just like, just about to start to sell. He was like, please back up to the tire. It was like full on show. And I sat down and was like, am I a cat? Am I a human? Am I a cat? It's so crazy.
Yeah.
Oh. And then you also missed the time where I was swung out of the show and the Tugger picture. Like, I think that's a super fun thing about our show. The actual picture that they took.
They took, yeah.
I broke ranks and stripped down in the audience to a leotard and tights and pointe shoes, which the poor person sitting next to me was probably like, what is this chick doing? And I remember like Tyler Haynes knew, but no one else in the cast knew. And I totally punked the whole cast and they were all gagging. Like they could, like the booth singers had to, like, I feel like they had to pick up because most of the people on stage were dying laughing. Cause like there's all of a sudden this like ballerina comes traipsing down the aisle and is like Tugger, and he disappears back.
Your production, I've talked to a good amount of your cast, and it's everyone's been so fun and has had like seems like it was a blast to do. I feel like you see that on stage, like you could see the relationships and the friendships and everything too. When you see it, it didn't not make me any less confused, but at least, you know, you at least get to kind of feel that.
Well, I mean, that's testament to the casting process and to Ruben casting and Andy and Dane Gillian Lynn and the creative team that was there. Like
they put great, I think because they knew how hard it was going to be and how intense the effort was needed, that they needed everyone to, at least the first, you know, the opening Broadway cast to like really gel and really, I mean, has anyone talked to you about how we all lined up and found like where we were in our alpha beta, like alpha omega? That was one of the first things Trevor Nunn did, or the first things that I remember. He was like, okay, everyone line up, and just like naturally, like more alpha people in life will go towards the front of the line. And so like, that's how we all, and he's like, do you see that? And we're like, huh? And like, normally
no,
I would
heard
put,
that story.
I would put Victoria like at the back of the line, but because I'm me, I was more like not the front, but like towards the front. So then it was like, that's also something that like infused Oliver. It was just wild. Like, we don't get to do stuff like that in the ballet world. And it just, I've taken all this information and applied it to the things that I do now there. But
would you do another Broadway show? What would be your top choice if you could do any show ever?
Any show ever? I think I am such a specific specialty that I think a role, I would have to create a role. That's where
okay,
I feel
create
most,
one total.
Most comfortable. Cause I'm not a straight theater person. And you know, I feel like I'm not, singing isn't where I live. Like, you hear Sarah Jean Ford sing and you're just like, this is your gift. this is yes. your gift. And as you hear Q sing, my gift is something different, but I also feel like I have this wonderful, I like storytelling through speech. Like I like acting in that sense. So I think a blending of those things is something that I'm really looking forward to creating as like my career goes on. Like, I think that's where the catalyst of my max potential to create something special.
So tell us, how can we find you on social media? Because that's the important question.
Okay. Well, you can find me at Georgina_Paskogan. On the Insta, on the tweets, it's G Paskogan, and I am the Rogue Ballerina. So you can also just use that hashtag. And yeah, I'm around.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on this podcast today and answering all of my ridiculous questions.
They're not really ridiculous.
And telling your thoughtful, serious answer in defense of Grisabella. I love hearing all the people who have actually really dug in beyond my ridiculous version.
I mean, everything is valid in this crazy world we live in.
So thank you for listening to this bonus episode with Georgina Paskogan on The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter or Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check us out on our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.